That's some
Oh, doing that alarm.
yeah, doing the alarm, which was 1942 February. Now here is an attempt at camouflaging the plant, showing the buildings here. Not too good at camouflaging, but at the tops of the building, this happens to be Santa Monica, not Long Beach, but generally speaking, it was made up of little houses and fences. And this is chicken wire with feathers blown into it there, which gave us a big problem because they were full of lice, and the lice would fall down the employees.
Now, what was the intent of that? Was it
just to
look
make it
like
look
foliage?
Like shrubbery, trees.
Now, what had someone asked me in class one day is, wouldn't someone from an airplane really realize that the scale between what was on the roof and what was on the street was very different, or was this to scale?
No, it was to scale.
It was, I see.
No, it wasn't vertically to scale. As you can see, they're pretty squat. But the buildings would, now there were not, there was one that, like the B-19, so-called B-19 building, was not quite to scale. It was a little smaller.
Mm.
But generally speaking, it was to give the effect, and if you looked at it from the air, these blended right into the streets.
Uh-huh. And the camouflage at Long Beach was very similar?
This is Long Beach here. Yeah, it was the same design, same type of thing.
As the Santa Monica?
Yeah, this is the Long Beach plant, and it doesn't show too well at this point, but there are little houses. And
I see.
So supposedly this all blended in, see.
Uh-huh.
And this would be the chicken wire stuff here, see.
But what would be, nothing would be
no,
done to
no,
camouflage
no.
the planes themselves?
No, no, they look just like that, see. And so up on top, now here's more of that stuff used for like lawns and so forth, and little walkways and so forth. Now this is inside, underneath the camouflage. This is all chicken wire with full of chicken feathers with a brown camouflage. So this one, I wanted to show you. This was the C-47 line, and you see quite a sprinkle. This is at the clock out at the end of the ship. You see quite a sprinkling of women through the line there. See? Now you can say, well, they were rushed up to be the first in line, but that was not the case. The mix is pretty much feeding out of the working areas over here and then on out to the parking lot.
Well, it seems from the figures I've seen, and from your comments, that Douglas had a much higher proportion of women than
they
aircraft
did.
Generally
they
in California or the United States.
No, they did, and I'll show you. Most of these are just public shots. I don't. Well, we had the plant, all the models were finally, instead of little cookie cutter cutouts, we made scale models like this, and left the roof off the building. The building was to scale. So you could look down inside and see. Oh, this is on the end of the war, and about 5 in the morning, instructing people how to get out of there. And I don't know that they don't show the women too much. They are there. They're everybody taking their toolboxes out, leaving. And the airplanes were cut up and destroyed. Some of them never been flown. But all of the camouflage was taken down, and these bomb shelters were broken up. These were concrete bomb shelters.
That was all done immediately after VJ Day?
And this, again, shows the camouflage as it being taken down and so forth. Now, these would be old-timers here. In fact, this was the first manager of the Douglas Long Beach plant, George Strumpel. He was a hard, two-fisted, practicing alcoholic. But he'd worked for Doug Sr., who was very loyal to the people that were with him back at Glen Martin. This was his test pilot, Eric Springer, started with Douglas. and wanted another old timer and so forth.
Were there, I know after the war, there were some women who became test pilots. Were there during the war at Douglas?
No.
Were there any women?
No. Well, to hurry along with some of these comments,
now that's that little book that Long Beach, as I remember.
Yeah, where did you run onto that?
One of the projects that we're trying to get into on the campus is some Long Beach local history. So the person doing research on that brought it to show me, and then I immediately, of course, saw your selection.
See, you know what this? The purpose of this thing was the DeMolays were supposed to have a project in the Lakewood City. DeMolays decided they would, as a bicentennial project, they would collect some ideas for the tricentennial.
Oh, I see.
So they wrote a letter to Tim Tyler at the Douglas Company there asking that a story of the Long Beach plant come about. Well, Tim's, in typical fashion, sat on it till the time was about all out. And so they wanted it done in 4 pages. Well, you couldn't possibly do that. So rather than write an article of reminiscing too much, I tried cramming facts and figures in as tightly as I could. And then the other people wrote about the earthquake and things like that. See? So that's how that happened to come about. And they printed 1,000 of these. And they didn't have a very good distribution, lost most of them.
Oh, dear, because I thought your account was terribly helpful for me.
Well, let me get out here. Women were less ambitious. That was very evident in those days. They were easier to move around. You get little comments from you move the mail around.
From job to job,
or let's move this whole operation into another area. And they were pretty pliable and would go along with it. So it made it kind of easy. They were not pay conscious. They had not been trained on thinking how much you make an hour and keeping track of that. So now these are generalities. Obviously there were some that were scheming the whole time. But on the whole, they were not pay conscious because they had no reference points.
Was the beginning, because there's, it seems from the kind of research we've done so far that there were two different groups of women. One, the ones who had come out of the home, but then the large number who'd been part of the workforce already, who moved out of lower paying jobs basically into industry.
Yeah, well, there were people like that that heard that wages were better in the shipyards, which they were for a period there. And they'd go down to the shipyards and try to get on as a welder or something like that, but the work was much heavier. So they came back to the plant in aircraft, finally. Everything was lighter, and the working conditions were much better. Obviously, a lot of them stayed down there. But they weren't motivated by thinking in terms of pay consciousness. It was the idea that it was called to their attention. You're making this much per hour, you can go over here to shipyards and make this much more, see? And it sounded plausible, so they would move back and forth, but so did the males.
What proportion of the women who were working there would you say were new to the workforce? Do you have any idea how many came out of the home compared to how many had already been working?
No, we never made a breakdown like that. There were records called exit interviews that would satisfy your question there, but they're long gone. One thing that we found was that the problems were with the women that had come out of the home. So I would see them as being more of a noticeable thing than the others, because we did get a lot of high school girls out of high school and in that age. The ones that we noticed were the people out of the home, and we noticed it this way, that they didn't stay on the job very long, and we couldn't find out why they were moving, why they would quit. Some of them quit before they got trained. And then we found out that they had to maintain the home at the same time and do the shopping and pay the bills and all the rest of the things. So we set up what was called an exit, three exit interviews. Most places just have, why are you leaving, type of thing. Well, many times they won't tell you because they don't want to get in an argument, or I want to get out of this place, and it seems so routine. So by having three exit interviews, by the third time, they get the idea you really want to know why I'm leaving, so I'll tell you. Well, it turned out that we had to offer services in the plant, such as pay your bills in the plant and do other things inside the plant. And as soon as we were able to do that and help them with the conflicts of home life and the job, and the four-hour shift came along, which allowed a little more leeway there. Then the other thing is the home women and the elder women that came in tended to set the pace for all the women, because they were very vocal about the language used in the shops. And in some cases, the men did an exaggerated amount of swearing and so forth, because he didn't like to have the women in there competing, or they just like to see them get upset, or just that way. And, so there was, in the minds of a lot of people, there was an invasion going on.
But how did the male supervisors react to the women coming in?
Well, some of them, of course, would have nothing to do with them. We had one case that I followed very closely. We had about 300 women doing sub-assembly work. And if things went wrong or weren't right for some reason, you could feel it or notice it. Well, the women, if you put a woman boss in, you were sure almost to have trouble, because the one thing that came out clearly was that women hated to work for a woman boss. That made it a little tougher on creating the so-called lead man, lower level of supervision and foreman and so forth out of women. So, when the war is going on, you're working long hours, you take the practical approach. And I remember in this one case of the 300 or so people, I picked an old-timer. He was really an old-timer, white hair, slow-moving. And I think he had Negro blood in him. I never checked on him or anything. He looked it. But he was an easygoing guy. So I asked him to move Chris Foria over in charge of these women, because we were having troubles. And this is almost 100% women in this department. And Chris went over there, and I watched him, and I talked to him about it when I happened to be wandering through the shop. And he had the right idea, you know. If somebody had a little complaint, he would listen. And that's really all they wanted in many cases. And he'd give them a little peck on the cheek, you know. Then the other thing, he warned me on, because I was asking him, you know, the problem around. Well, Chris, how do you keep this thing going so evenly? And he talked about the little peck on the cheek and so forth. He says, you have to know where to do that. And he says, the other thing, he said, when you're motivating, there are some of them in here, you pat on the shoulder, and they respond. He said, there's some of them you pat on the rear end and they respond. He says, if you get that mixed up, you're in trouble, which I'll always remember. And but he did a fine job. Yes, the other thing was that there's always a house mother of some kind.
Oh, were these those women counselors?
Pardon?
Oh, this was informally.
Oh, yeah, informally. Uh-huh. Later they were counselors, mm-hmm. of course. But informally it would start, and I had a note here, Mary's mother. If things were going badly there from one building area, I had met Miss Murray, was a good friend, she and her husband, and I'd hear from Mary's mother on the telephone. And it was usually something invariably about swearing or some vulgarity of some kind. And I could see both sides of it. I could see her side, terrible to have a bunch of high school girls in there. And so this was quite a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of hard to satisfy Mary's mother in this case. But again, all I'd have to do is listen.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time, if you just listen,
mm-hmm.
And don't try to do anything, it goes away. Because the person, all they wanted to do is make you aware of the condition, see? And, so I used to hear from this one regularly because I had met her and knew her
uh-huh.
fairly well. And that she would be the one that a lot of the women looked to sound off. And she could grab the phone and I'd listen to her, or if I were walking through the building.
But these problems would basically come to you rather than a personnel officer of some sort.
In this case, the personnel in those days wasn't much more than what you'd call employment.
Mm-hmm.
They're really employment, and you managed your industrial affairs until the union came mm-hmm. along, and then they changed things to military.
When did the women counselors come in?
Well, they certainly gradually began to be introduced effectively in 1944. Would be my first notice of them possibly doing a better job, or personnel beginning, not just the women counselors, because we didn't think of them in that term. If it happened to be a woman into it, then this would be fairly rare. In World War II, you didn't send a woman out to solve a problem,
mm-hmm.
An emotional problem or an argument. You wouldn't think of doing that. Because there was still this tendency for the woman to respect the man. She was used to that mm-hmm. to some extent. And to send another woman out, it's like some of the women newscasters we mm-hmm. see now on TV. Some of them have the right voice and mannerism for it, others don't. And this is a case, if you're used to hearing the news from well-modulated, masculine announcers and so forth, see, and you've been raised on that. Well, if you no longer hear that same sound, if it's high-pitched at all, you don't like it.
You know, it's interesting because so much of the propaganda from the period talks about as an attempt to help incorporate women and make it easier for them to work in the plants. We have these women counselors, particularly Volte and Vega made quite an issue of that. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that it was quite a different situation, it sounds like, down in Long Beach.
We had... again, this idea that women had to earn the respect of the male workers, mm-hmm. that was a problem that popped up regularly. And it's kind of tough because you get four or five males together and you put one female into that group helping. They have ways of making it tougher on her. Now, maybe other companies could do it. But I would never send a woman out to counsel at that time on a situation such as that. It just is not the thing to do. And we had mail, when the union came in 1944, it brought in these things in a different fashion, because the people and the supervision, they were not skilled at handling union language and mm-hmm. methods and things like that. So personnel developed from an employment agency into personnel as such. And the transition isn't overnight. It's mm-hmm. one of these gradual infiltration mm-hmm. things.
But during the peak of the employment of women in 43, then there really wasn't an established personnel department and counselors. It was only through the exit interviews that some of the problems were picked up.
I think they can be labeled an employment agency more than personnel. Mm-hmm. It was there. The other thing is, if you happen to look at a write-up of that day, you will see the terms used, personnel, and this sort of thing. But then and if you interpret that in the day's usage of that word, you think they were doing some things that they really weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And there is it was a masculine world, no question about
mm-hmm.
it. And you didn't look to women to straighten your problems out. And again, even when the union came
mm-hmm.
on, the union bargaining committee had women on it.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. Fact of the matter is, I guess I flipped the page there, that it showed you an idea of how it was pictured at the time. I hate to use the word, but it fits. It's token.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
were token women.
And I think they're probably token minorities too.
Oh yeah, but not in in the sense that
right.
they're using token today. We had them in there. It was it was thought by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you should certainly have them in there, but
the hope was that they wouldn't say too much, probably.
Yeah, but they were not part of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they, records would show they participated.
Uh-huh.
And that's what's confusing when you go back and look into things, particularly where you were there.
Right.
And you see that it's not stated the way it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It's stated in the manner, in the way things, jobs were classified and write-ups
mm-hmm.
were made. Well, I guess I didn't.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I view it as so important to, what we're doing is being so important in terms of actually interviewing the people about what it was like. So it's not just the official story that...
Yeah, you have to. I had a picture there of signing an agreement
mm-hmm.
that showed the two women in there. And they had one gal, Lodi Bickerstaff, I never forget her name. She was always in the union bargaining there, but she was there as a symbol that there were women in the union.
Hmm. I wonder
but
if it'd be
she
possible
never said anything.
I wonder if it'd be possible to locate her. Was she fairly young at the time?
She was about 40, I guess.
Oh. Hmm. So she'd be...
And, I don't know whether she'd be around yet or not, but she had the advantage of being with the union bargaining but not saying anything, but everybody out thinks she's working
mm-hmm.
as hard,
right.
I have my representative
yeah.
out there, it's the type of thing. And she just happened to be one that there's a tendency in the union to carry certain types of people that no one can fault. And if you cause those people any trouble, they used to use a fellow that I had trouble with. He had 8 children, and he was completely useless. And the union used him to test levels of management and things like that. And of course, some of us knew what the problem was, but what he would do, he'd come in and he'd contest something, either a sentence in the contract language, he didn't believe it worked that way, or some gripe, see. And the union would feed him these gripes,
mm-hmm.
because all they needed was you to say the wrong thing, and then the union paper came out, Wallen refuses to talk to so-and-so who has 8 hungry mouths to feed, and all that. They just loved to do that, see. And their view was the only way they could compete with management was to exaggerate. We have to have overkill because we can't afford the talent you guys have, see. And so they pulled that sort of thing, and you just had to watch. And they'd look for Lodi Bickerstaff. If you caused her any trouble, well, you had more misery coming your way than you could handle. So,
do you recall the name of the other woman who was on the...
No, but the union president, I think, lives over in Santa Monica. See if I could...
Do you recall his name?
Guy... First name's Guy. I can run, quite likely run him down.
Oh, thank you. When you were talking about the establishment of these services before, how exactly were these implemented and how do they function? For instance, the banking and the shopping services.
We just set up a store right inside a building.
With groceries, actually?
No, not,
or someone would
not
take
a market
an order.
And so forth. Mainly, it was mainly kind of notions.
Oh, I see. Well, also...
Type, where you could buy presents and gadgets and, I don't know, whatever, some elements of clothing
mm-hmm.
in there. You could buy shoes, safety shoes or plain shoes. You could buy certain working garments and things like that. But you had a place to pay the telephone bill, the electric bill, and the gas bill, and things like that.
Now, were these representatives from those companies who came in, or or Douglas itself set up the...
I don't remember who they were. We would obviously try to get the gas company to send a gas company guy out
mm-hmm.
to run it. And this would be kind of hard to do sometimes, but maybe they did it.
Mm.
I don't remember that one at all.
There was no... Douglas did not have any child care centers for the women with
no.
children right in the factories, did
no.
they?
No. It's that was a big problem, too. And it caused a lot of women to come in and finally couldn't hack it. And there were all kinds of family problems evolved from all of these things. And particularly if you got the husband on one shift and the wife on another shift,
mm.
and things like that. You get that, well, we had Long Beach there, just about 42,000 people at one time. And you just get every kind of a problem you could think of. It's a small city. And those problems develop there, and fights and stealing and everything going on.
What proportion of when there were the 42,000 and 20-some thousand women?
I'll give you a chart on that.
Oh.
Let me go through these.
Okay.
And I wanted to point out, too, that the women, they wanted to do the job, or they weren't pay conscious. They wanted to do the job, and they seemed to respond or demand to justice and fair play seemed to be far more important with the women than with the men. You could give a man a bad time. One of the problems with women, and why it had happened to me once and I never let it happen again, I forget what it was now, but I guess it was a mild reprimand or something for a gal that was on my staff, and she began crying. Well, when she walks out of the door, at least the women are saying, my God, what did Wallen do, see? And you if you're not used to having a crying woman on your hands, which I wasn't, it's upsetting. And you can't turn it off. And so you terminate your end of it right there. And then in the future, I always had a member of personnel present or someone else in when I was talking to a gal about her job or which might result in handling her in a manner of, well, maybe lay off or some change or something like that. I never got into much of that, but when it did happen, I learned to have somebody with me.
A man or a woman?
Always a man. Mm-hmm. They didn't think of pulling a woman counselor in to sit.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine maybe I had my secretary do it once or twice. I don't recall it happening. But I can recall it, the fact that I made the mistake once and I didn't repeat the mistake. Now, the gal still would cry, let's say. But it wasn't just me causing it. You get that there gets to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fair play and justice. And they worked hard to get the respect from the male side of the group. There was, of course, there were a lot of people speaking out for women's rights and things like that. There were gals that were gung-ho to have better things and more equality and so forth. It's just like it's shown in that picture there.
Mm-hmm.
You see in those pictures there, again, shows a woman doing some kind of a job, see, and fancier language describing it. Now, women, again, unfortunately, were stereotyped, and they couldn't do anything. Now, one thing you couldn't do is drive women like you can men. If you had to work all night long to get something out, you could get out there and drive a dozen or 100 men. But to drive the women in the same way just wouldn't work. You'd get them so far, and then they'd stop, and they couldn't stand it. It was very noticeable.
That sort of contradicts, though, there being a more pliable workforce, doesn't it?
Well, this is driving.
Mm-hmm.
The pliable end of it is to move it at their pace, their understanding. See, this is new to them.
Mm-hmm.
And men had been taught to expect. Father talked about the hard time he's having with his foreman or something, see. And so there was an expectation that you didn't find otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to driving, there are many instances where you just have to go all out. There were just a handful that could respond to something like that.
And by pushing the amount of work that needed to be done
making
in a set
greater
period
demands,
of time.
And they'd worked hard all day,
mm-hmm.
and now we have to work hard all night.
Mm-hmm.
You put demands above the normal demands. Normally you're pushing to get things done,
mm-hmm.
but when there has to be a drive, there's been a setback, or there's mm-hmm. been a demand for something, then we got to deliver. There was obviously a great big gap there that could be filled by either male or female in hiring. Certainly the opportunity was there. Went on with the skill deals, went to preference for men. Well, the conferences were beginning to be held, certainly in 1944, to discuss these problems that were coming up. A sort of, this could be a counseling session where problems in the handling of people were becoming apparent, and you had to do something and so forth. So it finally came around. Now you got to remember all the time they're shooting at us, and we're not winning the war, we're losing. So in those early stages, you could do things and put demands on people that you couldn't later.
Mm.
In fact, later on, when towards the end of the war in there, they'd take nothing of walking out, because they could go get a job towards peacetime, or peacetime was looking for people. So they began having these conferences. We established what we call feeder plants in these little cities, little towns, where instead of the people coming to work, mm-hmm. we took the work to the people. We had a lot of 4-hour shifts in those places so that school kids could work and housewives could work and so forth. 4-hour shift, that's pretty good. A lot of military types could work the 4-hour shift. They were stationed down mm-hmm. here someplace, and they were on duty up till 5 o'clock or something like that, or whenever, and they would rush from the military job up and clock into the 4-hour shift at Douglas.
Now, the 4-hour shift was at only the feeder plants or also at the main plant in Long Beach?
No, at the main plant, too. Mm-hmm.
Is that what was called the victory shift in the kind of popular papers?
I don't recognize that. Mm. Now, the feeder plants were mainly to utilize labor. See, the big thing, the problem with all the labor that you were trying to hire was there was no place to live.
Mm-hmm.
There was no housing available. So that became apparent, particularly where you advertise out of state. You come into the state and the job was there, but no place to live. So in order to simplify that, we set up the feeder plants, like Elsinore and Fullerton, places like that, and we sent key people out there to operate them. And in Long Beach, we had one major feeder shop that we used as a pre-factory training. They really were more of a training center than mm-hmm. that. Then that was for training workers to come in on the job. Some of them had never got out, quit before they finished the training. Many, many hundreds and thousands probably. And then if you wanted to be in supervision, along about 1943, it began to appear called Training Within Industry, and they had the most famous of which was known as a JIT, JRT, and JMT. JIT was Job Instruction Training. If you wanted to be a foreman, it instructed you on how to instruct your workers to do a job without confusing them or anything. JRT was Job Relations Study of understanding how to relate to the people and the jobs coming in mm-hmm. and keeping everything going. And Job Methods Training, JMT, was teaching you how to, if you had 10 pieces that were assembled into a small door,
mm-hmm.
There was a preferred sequence for those parts. You could put the door together 15 different ways, maybe. But there was a preferred way that was the shortest route
mm-hmm.
to assembling that door. Job methods training would train you to look for shortcuts or rearrangements of operations that you would feed back mm-hmm. up into the paper mill, and they'd correct the paper up there. Assembly procedures and so forth. And if you put it in the suggestion box, you might get an award.
And all these training programs were at the feeder plants primarily? Or they
no,
were in the, they
no,
were in
they
the
were
main
all
plant?
Over the country. Mm. Yeah. But it was a big break in recognizing that some of these things. There was a strong influence of personnel coming into the
yeah.
act.
Oh, I see.
Before. And in the old days, the hiring was done by the boss. And there was still a lot of that going on at the start of the war. But it was nice. We had an employment agency at 1212 American Avenue in Long Beach. And that was our main hiring hall down there. Now, you could get hired at the plant, but our main hiring hall was at 1212 American Avenue. And it had its problems, believe me. In the personnel group, you get the wrong kind of people in there, and you find a lot of them are a partying group. and they didn't work as hard, and they had more leisure time, mm-hmm. and a lot of coffee drinking time, and if there was somebody waiting to be interviewed, let them sit a while, so, and so forth. But we used to go down and monitor them. I know I half a dozen times walked in and then get a hold of the head guy. Mm-hmm.
They didn't learn how to speed up like the people in the shop did when you were coming through.
Yeah, well, when anybody went through like that, now, the trick is to walk right in on it. Don't call up and say, mm-hmm. I'm going to be down there or something. You just walk in and you can size up the people waiting for the job, and you can, and there's a system called PACE where you just evaluate, like the shutter on the camera, mm-hmm. you just take a picture quick like that. And what is that picture? Well, everybody's working at an 80% level. Now, it's a composite picture. There's some are working like the devil and some are grouping off, but that's your point. So I would use that concept whenever I walk in, even today, mm. Just summarize quickly mm-hmm. what the pace is in the plant. And it's related to certain other things that with practice, it's a fairly reliable tool.
Were these people the same ones who conducted the exit interviews, or did someone else do those?
No, that was Long Beach. That hiring hall was strictly hiring.
Oh, I see.
The exit interviews are at the plant,
mm-hmm.
and as personnel begins mm-hmm. to develop. And it's obvious we weren't solving the problem because we had to set this up, which begins to build personnel up,
mm-hmm.
and they get more recognition. They could come to a management meeting and lay down demands that the people need this or need that, or we have found, and so forth. But when the union is in there, that's really the catalyst that made it so you had to protect yourself by having skilled people.
Oh, I see.
Intercepting problems.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest change, I guess, that I can remember in personnel, is having a union to cope with.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
March, that was, see, I'm going to meet her down at Chevrolet Place from the car, and I'm going to eat at Marie Callender's.
Okay, good.
It was nice meeting you.
Yes, thank you very much for your assistance. Oh, it's easier to just let it go.
What was that? I was thinking of the next time. Trying to read the charts.
Were there other employment centers? For instance, some of the factories seem to have had little trailers set up in shopping areas. And
everything is tried. Out of state, out of town.
Mm-hmm.
But that came to a screeching halt from lack of housing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't... I never forget one carload of five people came from Calabasas to Long Beach. Now they passed Lockheed and all kinds of subcontractors, North American, everything, before they got to Long Beach. I always regretted not looking them up and saying, how come? It just still bugs me. In fact, what happened is I had a map of the California, Southern California, and put little map pins in it with a curiosity to see where our people came from. And I'll never forget the little pin stuck in Calabasas. And it just amazed me.
But most of them, do you recall from that distribution, most of them were in the Long Beach area, or those who were at the feeder plants right in their neighborhoods, basically?
Oh, yeah. You could see in a feeder plant the people around were going into the feeder
mm-hmm.
plant. Now, if they wanted to make the drive in the Long Beach plant, obviously they could be hired. But it was pretty convenient in a feeder plant.
Mm-hmm.
You had your home, and you had your neighbors mm-hmm. in there, and many times you knew most of the people that were in the feeder plant.
So, in fact, most of the people in Long Beach plant were from Long Beach, San Pedro
mm-hmm.
area.
Yeah.
And was that true of the Santa Monica plant, sure, too, and yeah, then of the El Segundo plant?
No, people tended to live close to their work, mm-hmm, before the war. Mm-hmm.